thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Could we...
Here's John Williams.
Substitute a big thought for a big guess. A couple of them, actually. TV stars on our show today. I don't normally get all Bill and Wendy on you, but I've got a couple of folks who are on television on my show today, and I'm frankly a little nervous because I don't do TV interviews well. Okay, here they are. One you don't know, his name is Joe Galwa, but he's on a TV show that a lot of us have watched called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Is it now just called Queer Eye?
Yeah, that's the reboot.
It used to be called, so the reboot's Queer Eye. I thought you were abbreviating, but that's the name of the show now. The original was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Yes.
So there's a guy who they did, and he is now going to be in Chicago tomorrow night. He's at a comedy club called Bourbon on Division, and he's doing his stand-up shtick there. But he was the guy that they just did in this most recent season. Netflix dropped it in February, and if you watched season 7 and saw the comedian from Atlanta, he's going to be in Chicago, and he'll join us in just a few minutes. So there's that. I don't think I love the new version of this show. And then also, Dermot Mulroney is going to join us. And I know Dermot Mulroney is a big deal, but I don't know his story that well. So I'm power watching it. Like I'm going, oh, yeah, I know that movie. Oh, I saw him in that movie. Oh, my God, he was great in that show. But I know I'm going to call him Dilbert at some point. So I want you guys to cover me if I get that wrong. Just go, John, it's Dermot. Here it is. Dermot Mulroney played a breakout role in the 1988 Western Young Guns and has gone on to appear in such films as Longtime Companion, Point of No Return, Copycat, My Best Friend's Wedding. You may have heard of some of these. About Schmidt, Where the Day Takes You, Living in Oblivion, The Wedding Day, Georgia Rule, The Gray.
He did a season of Mozart in the Jungle on Amazon, which is a show I love to watch.
He was in the Steve Jobs biopic as Jobs. Boy, he was good in that. He was miserable in that. On television, he played recurring roles, such as on New Girl, Enlightened, Shameless, and Pure.
Oh, yeah, he was a restaurant owner boyfriend kind of thing.
Yeah, as were they all, and Pure Genius. In addition, Mulroney is an accomplished cellist and has played on the soundtrack of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Couldn't he let some other cellist do that? I know some cellists. Would it kill you to not be the celebrity cellist and just let some other cellist do it?
That's really cool. Good for him.
I don't know. It's like when famous people do voiceovers for commercials and animated characters and films. There's a whole industry of people that aren't doing those jobs anymore because, no, we want to go, oh, that's Dilbert Mulroney.
Dermot.
Thank you. So he's been a cellist in some soundtracks as well. He's with Stephen Colbert, and he's going to be speaking. They got this thing they do at Northwestern. He's an alum, and he'll be there. Is it this weekend? Tomorrow night?
Yeah, there is one tonight and tomorrow night.
And he'll join us at 2:10. It's 1:11 now on WGN Radio. By the way, I suppose we have all mentioned this, but I don't think any of us should not. Jim Carollo, JC we called him here, our longtime chief engineer, has passed away. He fought cancer I'm just reading from a note that Todd Manley, our boss, sent to us, and I think Todd put it so well, I think I'll quote him. He said he fought cancer with the same strength, perseverance, and humor that made him our brilliant director of engineering for a quarter century. JC joined WGN Radio at the tender age of 24, and not only spent over 35 years in our hallways, he led two major studio moves, including the creation of the WGN Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is his baby. JC was a vintage AM radio leader, but he was also an innovator at every turn. Never stopped chasing the next great piece of gear. He was older than some of us, and yet he was as hip to what the industry was doing as any of us.
I was emailing with Wes Bleed, who used to work here in the newsroom for years, about JC.
Yeah.
And he reminded me that JC used to go up early in the morning. We weren't always in the studio, Showcase Studio,
right,
24/7. And he would go up there in the mornings and dust it, keep it clean, because it was his baby.
And by the way, he literally would do that.
Right.
He'd arrange the microphones. He would make it just so. And yet he looked like, at times, a character out of Dilbert. I mean, you know, shirt tucked in, pocket protector, neat haircut, dark glasses. All business, that guy. But just, and I would have so many conversations with him about equipment or something I wanted to do that engineering-wise was going to be complicated, and he would just listen to me, sometimes with a pained expression. He was a minimalist with his words, and he would just say, all right, let me see. Like that.
Or be like, yeah, you can't do that.
Right. Or no, that's an impossibility. We can't levitate. Okay, fine. That was JC. What a terrific guy. And what a terrific legacy this building is to him. His wife, Karen, and the entire Corolla family are going to miss him, as are we all. But I'll tell you what, as long as this radio signal is on the air, it'll have a little JC in it. Thank you, JC. Thank you, Todd Manley, for putting well the words that a lot of us think about that guy. By the way, I just said the word levitate. You know why? Did you see that, is it David Copperfield was in, I don't know.
He was testifying, right?
He's being sued because somebody was, he does the vanishing audience trick. And I don't, there's two kinds of people in the world. Those who want to know how people do the tricks and those who don't want to know how they do the tricks. Do you want to know how he does the tricks? Yes or no? Go.
No.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's not real, so I don't care.
But I've seen this thing before. They take balloons, like 12 balloons, great big bouncy balloons, like giant beach balls. And they throw them out into the crowd and they bound, 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 bound around. And finally, they land on some people or they grab them and they say, okay, if you have one of the balls and it is ever so random, hold on to that, come on stage. They come on stage. Now we've randomly selected 12 people. They're up on stage. He does the vanishing audience trick. He puts them all on little like bleacher things and then he throws a curtain around them and then 3, 2, 1, boom, they drop the curtain, and those people are gone. And you're like, hokey smokes, how did that happen? And so then he comes out and does a little bow and the point and the wonder of it all. And then he says, they're over there. And you turn around, in the back of the theater, all of them are sitting there. And you go, how the heck did that happen? It's the most amazing thing.
Do you think the stage spun around?
One of the people in that group of 12 randomly selected audience members, in getting his butt back to the theater, fell, hurt himself, suffered what he said was a permanent brain injury. So now they're suing Copperfield and his producer. So they had to go to court, and in the trial, and this suit thing, whatever you call it, I guess that's a trial, they had to reveal how they did the trick. So it's online now. And if you want to watch it, watch it. And if you don't, don't. The sad part about it is I won't ruin it for you. I mean, it's magic. I don't know whatever that means to you, but you know that there's just some tricky way that they get the people from there to there. They aren't Confederates. They are real randomly chosen audience members. But, you know, there's a passageway and they all run down the hall and then they get seats back there. It's an optical illusion and they run real fast is essentially what happens. But, so watching it is rather anticlimactic. It's not all that. It's as you might imagine. But it's also still a little disappointing that in order to do this, they had to show everybody how it's done. One other quick headline here. Another Trump sanctuary setback. The court upholds the injunction and blocks the administration from changing grant conditions to force immigration cooperation. That from today's Chicago Sun Crimes. Here's what that's about. That Chicago and Illinois are sanctuary city, sanctuary state. The Trump administration says if you want extra funding for your police forces, you need to cooperate with us and turn over, say, immigrants or illegal immigrants to ICE.
Not extra funding, allocated funding.
No kidding. I thought it was a supplemental fund that would have gone for police vests and things like that.
It's money coming from the federal government, but I don't think it's above and beyond.
Well, we weren't going to get it if we didn't cooperate. We didn't want
to
cooperate.
Right, they were going to take away what we should have gotten.
So the court has ruled on that, and the attorney representing the city of Chicago will say hello to us in the next half hour. So this Queer Eye for the Straight Guy episode, let's talk to one of the people that was in it in a minute. Here is a cut. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy is now Queer Eye. This is the new boot up of that, what I thought was really good show. It's on Netflix. They just dropped a whole new season in February. And one of the people that's on if you go watch it right now, is a comic from, I think, Atlanta, and he's going to be at Bourbon on Division tomorrow night. First, here's what the show sounds like these days.
We are going to go see baby Joe Galois, nominated by his friend Ian and his big brother Paul. He lives in his childhood bedroom at his parents' house.
Back up, a 33-year-old man living at his parents' house? How are you getting laid?
My name's Joe Galois. I'm 33 years old. I live right outside Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a stand-up comedian.
And on top of it, that bedroom is a mix of a comic book store and a sports memorabilia store.
You are not getting laid.
Exactly what every woman wants to see in a bed.
I wonder how his parents feel about him being in the house at 33.
I would say not that good.
Joey, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, man.
Oh, my gosh. A 12-year-old lives here.
Hi, you've got a look of fear on your face. Don't be scared, hi. Nice to meet you.
This room is a mess. What is going on here? When was the last time you changed these sheets?
When did your mom change these
sheets? When did these mom change these sheets?
What year was that? I don't remember.
That is their introduction to him and to all of us. So I talked to Joe Galois just before the show today, and I asked him how one even gets on that show these days.
They started filming it last year, and it just came out. Like, this is the first season they did it. Came out this past February. I was the 7th episode out of 8.
I'm just catching up with the show now. How did they find you? How did you find it?
Well, that's kind of a funny story because I was not looking for anything like this. I wasn't trying to get into any sort of like reality shows or anything. But being in Atlanta, there's a lot of film industry and television there now. Like, it's become like the new Hollywood in terms of like production and stuff.
Right.
So everyone's getting emails about casting and all this stuff. Some comedian buddies of mine who heard about it, and they were looking for people to cast, and they suggested me because I lost all this weight. So like, I'm kind of wearing like all these old clothes that don't fit anymore. So I kind of look disheveled. I was long overdue for a makeover and deserving of it. So the producer of the show in touch with me, and then we went from there. I was in the casting process.
I see. It's funny because we never know what the truth is versus what we see on these quote-unquote reality shows. But I'll tell you how they portrayed you as a viewer, and then you tell me how accurate that was, okay?
Yep.
So here's kind of this disheveled, now not wearing clothes that fit him, bearded, loner dude, still living in his parents' house. In fact, in the childhood bedroom that shares a wall with his mom and dad. He is an up-and-coming comedian. He's funny, but he isn't polished yet. But he is a guy who needs to sort of break out, not only in comedy, but in his own personal way, too. They portrayed you as kind of a sad loner dude who is going to now get new clothes, a new image, and a new career.
Well, the sad part probably is not entirely accurate, but they're like, I do keep to myself sometimes and stuff like that. But everything else, like, yeah, that, like, all this stuff about living next door to my parents, like, in, like, my room's, like, shares the walls with theirs, like, all that's true. Everything's true. The sad loner stuff is kind of iffy because I'm pretty sociable, like, when I'm out. I'm sociable if I talk to people, but I'm never, like, I'm more of a speak when spoken to guy. I never try to like be the
life of the party. Right. Well, that's I know some comedians that are like that, but they, for instance, took the part where you said, "Well, I haven't had a serious girlfriend in years. We didn't see any of your friends."
I mean, there's truth to it, but it wasn't like that. It is what it was, and that's the avenue they went with on the show, which is fine because it wasn't like they made anything up. It was just a nugget of truth that they focused on.
I remember the original iteration of this show and thought, my first reaction to Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, I thought, oh my God, what a mean-spirited, horrible title for a TV show. This is years ago.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that this will work. And then lo and behold, the guys on the first version were very warm, very friendly, kind of funny, but they would thrust themselves into the homes and lives of guys you never would have imagined would be open to it, right? And it worked. Now I watch your episode, and I see them talking about you before they meet you. Then I see them burst into your room and encounter you. And while I suppose the intent of the show is good, I thought it was more mean-spirited or snarky. I was a little taken aback by that. What do you think of that?
Everything like on TV is exaggerated to a degree, so it's like they have to be big to like show like how much of a need of help I was. So they overreacted for the cameras. But I mean, none of them. I took it all in stride.
I mean, you hadn't met these guys. They walk into your room, they immediately start to talk smack to you and go into your closet and just start pulling clothes out and saying mean-spirited things. And then they look at some of your personal collections of things that you have in your room, and I thought we're mocking you. And I thought, who the hell are you guys? Get out of here.
Yeah, but I mean, doing comedy is kind of it's like being roasted. So I kind of I got it. So I mean, yeah, I was prepped, and you know, I can dish it out as well as I can take it most times. So I didn't have a problem with that at all.
So not only did they want you to sort of, you know, jumpstart your career and life a little bit here, but they also then wanted you to move into the basement.
Yeah.
Has that in fact happened? Is that what you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm still currently down there for the time being.
How old are you?
I'm 34 years old at the moment, for the time being.
You're not 34-year-olds are not supposed to be living in their parents' basements.
In Italy, they stay there till they're 40. But no, I know it's a situation I'm working on, and it's just one of those things where like some stuff sometimes the chips fall where they may, and that's where I'm currently at right now.
Well, we see your dad in the episode, and he sure seems like a sweet guy who's supporting you and doesn't seem to mind it. You have a good relationship with is your mom and dad there, or just your dad?
Yeah, my mom and dad they're both here, and
you all get along?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they're also incredibly supportive. Like when I had to tell them, like, hey, just so you know, there's going to be a camera crew in here. And things are going to get turned upside down for about a week.
Yeah, you might want to button your shirt, Dad.
Well, yeah.
So, although I saw Green Bay Packers paraphernalia on the shelf in one of the rooms. I think it was your room. Are you a Green Bay Packers fan? Do you have any connection to the Midwest?
Yeah, I'm a huge Packer fan. That's like the main team I support. And I know saying that in Chicago is not going to endear me to a lot of people.
No, no.
Yeah. So we're going to keep that quiet during my show on Saturday. But yeah, I've been a huge Packer fan like my whole life. I lived in Connecticut. I was born in Connecticut when I was a kid. I didn't know what Connecticut, as far as I knew when I was really little, didn't have teams. So that's just the team I adopted. If I knew, if I was a smart kid, I would have realized, oh, I'm a New England Patriots fan. I would have had a lot more
right.
More championships in my name in the past couple of years.
If you had to pick a team, that wasn't a bad choice. So you probably were you Bart Starr or Brett Favre?
Well, I started liking them when it was Don Majkowski, like the late '80s, So it was like right before Brett Favre. So everyone. Whenever I tell people, like, I'm a Packer, I'm like, oh, you don't like them because of Brett Favre. I'm like, nah, I was there for the bad years.
I was there beforehand, So, okay, what is the show done for you? What was the night that it first aired?
It premiered on Netflix on February 7th.
What happens to somebody after they're on a show like that?
You get recognized a lot more. When we did the show, like, I had no clue, like, how big it was going to be. It could have been something that, like, Netflix would just sort of quietly drop onto their, like, menu.
Yeah.
And like not put up, but they got huge promotion. It got a huge feedback from everybody. Like the Rotten Tomatoes rating for it has been like through the roof. Like it's extremely high. Like it was critically acclaimed and stuff like that. My Twitter account has blown up. I had before the show premiered, I had like maybe 400 followers, and maybe 300 of them were bots, like fake accounts.
Yeah.
And now I'm up to like 7,500 and growing. And some celebrities are tweeting about the show, and I'm like Brian Fuller, the creator of Hannibal and like Pushing Daisies and stuff like that, tweeted about the show. He actually posted a screenshot from my episode on his Twitter account because I had a book about featuring his show Hannibal.
And nice.
He freaked out. So it's like just weird, like knowing that these like big names in like Hollywood are at least aware of me.
Your Twitter handle is at Joe Galois, GALLOIS, at Joe Galois.
Yes, sir.
So good for you on that. What does it do to your comedy career?
I'm getting booked on more stuff now. I'm trying to get some stuff out of town. This one's going to be like my first big out-of-town show I'm doing in Chicago, so I'm very excited about that. So
that's Joe Galois, the comedian that was in Episode 7 of Queer Eye and is in town at Bourbon on Division tomorrow night. Good luck to him. And again, his Twitter handle is at Joe Galois, GALLOIS. So the headline on page 4 of today's Chicago Sun Crimes, another Trump sanctuary setback, declaring the United States a country that jealously guards the separation of powers. A federal appeals court in Chicago yesterday dealt the administration a new blow in its ongoing feud with sanctuary cities. Joining us once again, he's been on with us before, is Ed Siskel. He's the head of the city's law department. Last he was in our studio, but we'll take him on the phone today. Ed, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks. I'm great, and it's good to be here.
So is this something that you personally oversee, or does somebody else handle this at the city?
No, so we had a number of lawyers here in the city's law department who were involved in the case, and our head of our appellate division, Benna Solomon, argued the case before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. But we also had two national law firms that were helping us with this pro bono, so not charging the city anything for their help. But so we had a great team, and they did an excellent job presenting the arguments to the court, and we're very pleased with the decision yesterday.
Tell us, what was at play? What was this about?
So this is about a program called the Byrne Justice Assistance Grant, it's actually named after a New York police officer, Officer Byrne, who was killed in the line of duty and was actually an immigrant who became a New York police officer. It's a grant program that's been around for many years that provides public safety assistance grant funds to cities and counties all across the country. Chicago has received those grant funds for many years for important tools to assist the Chicago Police Department. And last year, the Trump Justice Department decided to try to impose some new conditions on cities for receiving those public safety grant funds. One of those conditions was to allow ICE agents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, into our lockup facilities to investigate potential immigration violations. And the other was to require us to give advance notice to ICE agents before releasing anyone from our custody. We challenged those conditions interfering with our values as a welcoming city and our community policing strategy, argued that the Attorney General doesn't have the authority under federal law and under the Constitution to condition grant funds on those two areas. And the trial judge here in Chicago agreed with us. It went up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and in a resounding opinion yesterday, the Court of Appeals said that the Trump Justice Department was violating the Constitution in imposing these conditions.
They said Congress has the power of the purse. They get to donate or grant this money, and the president can't trump that, in other words, right?
Exactly, and that actually Congress has considered the possibility of doing this a number of times, and each time has rejected doing it, and that the Attorney General and President Trump can't go around the will of Congress and basically conscript local law enforcement into enforcing federal immigration law.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about that. I mean, so you said there's two things here. ICE wants to get into the lockup and talk to potential immigration violations, and they also want advance notice on raids. Why don't you cooperate? If you believe that the city or county is arrested, I guess it would be city in your case, if the city has in lockup somebody that may be here illegally, do you feel any obligation to cooperate with the federal government about that?
Well, you know, first of all, it's important to recognize that the access that the Justice Department and Immigration and Customs Enforcement is seeking here is not dependent on them having to come forward with any evidence that somebody has committed a crime. Most of the investigations that they might be doing are not even for criminal offenses. They're for a civil immigration issue, and that the conditions that they were trying to impose are not tied to having any evidence to show that somebody has in fact committed an immigration violation, but simply to be able to investigate that. And, you know, it is already the case that the rhetoric coming from the Trump administration has caused widespread fear among immigrant communities here in Chicago and around the country that fundamentally undermines public safety.
Yeah, but that's
makes people less inclined to reach out to the police to cooperate with.
I understand that, Ed, but that's not what I'm getting at here. I in principle understand the frustration of the administration or people listening to you right now who say, wait a minute. Shouldn't we do everything we can to cooperate if somebody is not here legally? I know it's not your job to go looking for them, but if you have someone that you think might not be here legally, shouldn't you cooperate as much as you can with the federal government?
Well, and the federal government can play their role in enforcing federal immigration law. The court actually addressed this point in the opinion yesterday, saying that, you know, while the federal government throughout their briefs talks about the sanctuary cities interfering with their enforcement, that is a red herring, the court called it, because there is nothing in this case, the court said, that involves any affirmative interference with federal law enforcement at all. That's a direct quote from the opinion. This is about whether the federal government can tie public safety grant funds that the Congress set up the program in a way to give states and local law enforcement the ability to design how they think crime should be fought in their jurisdiction, and unilaterally imposes a requirement that they have to affirmatively assist federal immigration law. And that's the problem here. And that's what the court recognized was a violation of separation of powers.
Yeah, right. I mean, regardless of that line of questioning I'm pursuing, at the end of the day, it is, should they have the right to withhold funding? And it's funny because, so we have these two characters, Donald Trump and Rahm Emanuel, and it's sort of, it plays out kind of personal, doesn't it? And and what the Justice Department is saying is, evidently Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the city of Chicago do not care enough about public safety that they will cooperate with us. They will even forego funds to ensure public safety because they're in love with this sanctuary status thing. That's not my view, Ed. That's not my view.
Yeah. It's not about any sort of personality difference or about Rahm Emanuel or Donald Trump. You have cities and counties all over the country that have joined in and supported our litigation. We had 37 cities and cities big and small in red states and blue states that filed briefs supporting our position. We had former law enforcement folks, all because they recognize that, one, state and local officials should be able to wage the crime fight in the way that they know makes the most sense for their jurisdiction. Frankly, that the studies have shown that sanctuary cities are actually safer, that they have lower crime rates, and with good reason, because that means that people in immigrant communities, people throughout the city are that much more inclined to see the police as partners in public safety rather than feeling like if they report crime, if they serve as witnesses, that they risk folks in their community being deported.
So what does this mean then for Chicago? How much money do we get and how do we spend it?
Well, so the grant that is particularly at issue in this litigation is the 2017 Byrne JAG grant, which is about $2 million for Chicago. Now, the key thing, though, to recognize is that this is very much a test case, that while, you know, we might be litigating in that context, the Trump Justice Department has already tried to expand this to other grant programs, to the COPS grant program. We're talking about this for cities all over the country. The Justice Department, even though they have lost every single case that has addressed this issue, so this is being litigated in Philadelphia, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and here. So they're 5-0, meaning we have won five times. The Justice Department has lost every single time. Even despite that losing record, they have made the choice to not distribute these grant funds to anyone in the country, not just Chicago. So that involves, you know, tens of millions of dollars just for 2017 alone. And it's affecting, you know, police departments in cities all over the country who want to use this stuff to, here in Chicago, we would use it for expanding the ShotSpotter technology, which allows police to deploy faster and more accurately in response to gun violence. But other cities, you know, use the stuff for equipment, you know, for personnel. So it's it is really belies the Trump Justice Department's rhetoric, at least, that they care about public safety and about helping local police departments.
You don't have this money and you're not expecting a check anytime soon, huh?
Well, you know, we think, given the fact that they keep losing, the Justice Department would be smart to recognize that, you know, they should actually distribute the grant funds, you know, that if they really care about helping cities like Chicago with the crime fight, they ought to give us the grant funds, and we can continue to fight this out in court, but in the meantime, actually use those resources to help our police department. So I'm hopeful that they will do that. We are exploring all avenues for pushing them to finally distribute these public safety grant funds, and hopefully they'll recognize that the time has come to do that.
Come sit in my studio next time, Ed. It's good to hear your voice. Congratulations over there.
Thanks, and I look forward to seeing you in person next time.
Yeah, our best to you guys over there and gals at the city's law department. Ed Siskel is the head of that in Chicago.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
Including Sunday. This is John. It's 208. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, looking at a sun-kissed Michigan Avenue sidewalk, blue skies, comfortable temperatures. It's so warm outside, it's almost average, said Steve Bertrand.
Just a couple degrees away from average.
Thank you for the heads up on that. So today is the start of Northwestern's ComFest weekend, which culminates in a starry night. It's a variety show they have at Northwestern University in Evanston of alumni performers. It's hosted by Stephen Colbert. He's in town. Dozens of award winners are coming home for the family reunion, including Brian D'Arcy James, Heather Headley, Catherine Hahn, Kimberly Paisley Williams, and Dermot Mulroney.
Kimmy says if you love someone, you say it. You say it right then, out loud. Otherwise, the moment just
passes you by.
How many of you just went, passes you by? Dermot Mulroney joins us now on WGN. Dermot, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be on WGN.
Did you just say that? Did you just go, passes you by?
No, but that scene sure lives on. It's incredible. We, of course, shot that on one of the tour boats under the bridges on the river in Chicago, and everybody remembers it. It's the most memorable scene I ever appeared in a film, that's for sure.
You know, I was wondering about that, if actors and actresses of note have sort of like a list of, or do they fondly hold certain lines they got to say, or certain scenes or moments in movies? That must be one for you, huh?
Hey, well, that's certainly one. And the real answer to that is that I've loved every minute of being on every set I've ever been on. But yeah, there are moments that stick out. I have a great memory of all of it, so I'm really lucky that way. Of course, I always remember the people who gave my first breaks and, you know, stuck their neck out for a young actor and all that. So it's been crazy. It's over 30 years since I was here at Northwestern.
Yeah, how about that? By the way, just for fun, I mean,
Northwestern's even on WGN seems like big strides. You know, when I went here in the 80s, it was, you know, It was more of a provincial place. Now, WGN is actually talking about Northwestern University. Just think of the strides they've made.
Imagine that. Imagine
big
that.
Big time now. Now, NU is big time.
I think it's
really
pretty mutual. We love having them here. Of course, our sports director is the voice of the Wildcats, and it's good for both of us. Are there other movies or scenes, though? Are there other lines? Like I said, okay, so we'll do My Best Friend's Wedding, but what else would you put in the list? I know you love all of your children, but is there another scene or movie that is stand out for you?
Absolutely. There's just a few, maybe two handfuls of really good movies I was in. But, of course, Young Guns, people, especially the guys that come up to me from that, we did that in, like, I think it was 1988, maybe released in 99. Yeah. Incredible. And I had such a picturesque character. They had me playing really wild characters from a young age. That was Dirty Steve. And some of those lines, did you see the size of that chicken? Or he ain't all there, or is he? All those things, they really stuck. And then for me, it's just random lines that I remember. And I can tell you, I can't remember lines from a scene I shot yesterday. But over the years, certain ones have stuck in.
Like what?
Obscure movies, even. I was in a great movie early on called Bright Angel, and the brother says, he says about his brother, I ran him into O'Hare Airport, and I said to my brother, hey, don't you recognize me? Right. I don't know why that one stuck, but the Chicago Airport, and that was Will Patton.
Wow.
Ford's script, Bright Angel, is the movie that is kind of lost. Some of those movies, you know, fell in between VHS and DVD. I know it sounds weird, you kids, but there's a whole flock of movies from that weird year or two when they didn't take the VHS deals and transfer them to the DVD. Some of the good stuff I did got missed in those.
I'll bet you've got, I won't dwell on this anymore, but Shameless and New Girl and some of the TV work you've done. Boy, oh boy, those are some great properties. You've really landed in some nice spots.
Oh, thank you so much. Going back to my answer before, I have such gratitude for these parts. And Chicago as a whole, it's incredible. Not just Shameless, which is really tells the story of the heart of this city, I think, and crazy characters. I was, just so thrilled to join a hit show and then be here to shoot the exteriors in Chicago. I also did Crisis here. Not everybody saw it, but, it was the one-of-a-kind, disgruntled ex-CIA father who decides to kidnap the bus his kid's on for, to get him back or something like that. So,
something like that. What are you working on now? I know you're Northwestern, and I want to talk about this show tonight, but what are you doing right now that I'm going to see?
Well, right now I start tomorrow. On Monday I start a short show. It's a horror anthology for Hulu called Flesh and Bone. So I'll do one of those, and hopefully other actors will join in to do the others. It's like a holiday horror series, I think. So that's yet to come, but I'll appear soonest, I think, in The New Girl final season. Right now, I have a supporting part in there. Return as that character that just liked so much from the beginning. And I also show up on Arrested Development, which was just a thrill to go full-blown comedy like those jobs. I wound up doing what it seems like Northwestern trains for somehow, right?
Well, so how does that go? Like, when you graduate with a degree from Northwestern, was it in theater?
My degree was in radio, television, film, so I was a little gun-shy to throw all in on being an actor. But I had great teachers and was really gifted that way, in that I could study acting without being in that department. They do more of that now, but at the time I kind of jumped the fence. And then an agent from Los Angeles came my senior year. This is 1985, and so it's the same year after Steppenwolf took off. And all of those guys, Malkovich and Headley and, Terry Kinney, and great, great actors, Billy Peterson, all moved out that same year, so that agent came to clean up the crumbs.
Really? Like recruit? Like just say, hey, what have you, did he go to shows or ask you to audition or something for him?
Yeah, she knew that she was only auditioning. This is Barbara Gale is her name, and she was only auditioning graduating seniors. So that's how I got signed and started. Really, you have to think, too, those are the years they were making, for the first time, a ton of teen lead movies. So I was the commerce at that time. They were basically looking for the next Judd Nelson, right? when I got signed up. It's also, it's interesting that it sounds like such a novel thing, but agents and producers should have been doing this all along. Going out and finding talent, yeah. Scouting talent and farming them up. If that had happened, we wouldn't have so many other nationalities playing American parts. But, you know, everybody's a great actor, of course.
We wouldn't have so many other nationalities playing American parts? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
You mean, what, like Irish people like you?
I mean outsourcing talent to the Great Britain and Australia.
Isn't that funny? I've never thought of American actors as a sort of challenged species, but it is amazing sometimes to me when I'll watch a TV show or a movie and a perfectly American-sounding actor is later revealed to me to have a British or Irish accent. And I go, How do they do that? And maybe, yeah, why not give that to a Northwestern grad, for crying out loud?
Exactly. Then take your time to add up a couple of those salaries and figure out where that money winds up. And, you know, then
they could be paying taxes to us here.
Global economy, yeah.
How about it?
You know, are we on this topic? Let me go. Let's start.
Really? I did not like, I know women or minorities need to have equal access, but I never thought of American actors as a challenged species. Is that a thing?
It is not. That is not at all what I'm saying. So don't mistake me to compare in any way to some downtrodden segment of our population.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Well, I'm glad that somebody would have the sort of wherewithal to do that, because they don't do that for radio, TV. Your major when you graduated, I don't ever recall radio.
True. I think there weren't a whole lot of radio scouts out there farming up your talent. You did this all on your own.
Yep, see, you did. You sent out tapes.
I got news for you. There still aren't.
They don't, and they should. By the way, Dermot Mulroney's on a phone line. He's at Northwestern tonight as sort of a cavalcade of stars. Stephen Colbert will MC, and it's, I guess, a variety show. But you have the radio chops. I guess you know that. You've done voiceover work. But if you had this voice when you graduated, you could have easily been on the radio every day.
Well, I'd have loved it, and honestly, that was one of the options I was working toward, that and working. I figured I'd be working my way up that camera crew in the local Chicago film industry. That's what I thought I'd do, wind up being a cinematographer.
So what's going on tonight?
I got signed, and I was ready, because I had a great teacher, so I was ready, and then took off at a really young age. Now I'm 33 years in. But I see guys coming through the lobby. Richard Kind, I think I saw, was a great comedian, of course. I think I saw Tony Roberts walking down, walking down Evanston Street just now. So they put together alumni from across the ages. And, of course, it's all to raise money. But it's going to be one of the best nights Northwestern's put together.
So do people buy tickets to this? And then what are you going to do on stage?
I'm sure they're available right now. You know, I was in the Meow Show, which is Northwestern's version of Second City.
Go Cats.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. It's the improv show. That's also an annual show here. So they've asked me to introduce alumni from that sketch comedy show.
Oh, I see.
Was a sketch comedy in the 80s at the same time that Second City had, you know, 2 years, just 6 years after Second City had become SNL. So at the birth of Chicago comedy troupe, comedy, which is still coughing up great talent, always has been. So I kind of just stepped into Chicago at a time when it was a talent pool. So that's why I'm still here. I mean, I worked hard since. Can't say anything against that. But, you know, I've really got those early people who hired me and pushed me along and advocated for me. So I'd wish that for any student coming out of any college if they've got talent and drive.
Well, my friend Steve Bertrand here was with a bunch of kids from Marquette. Yeah. Was that yesterday, Steve?
Yeah, just yesterday.
And it was the dean of the school, I think, of communications up there. And I just said, it would be nice. I went to Southern Illinois, Carbondale. And it's got a good radio TV school, too. But I said, I think all of these schools need to do a better job of taking those graduates and embracing their careers, not just graduating them, but literally helping them find work. And I what they were doing at Marquette was a good idea. Let's walk them through some studios, show them what it's like, and introduce them to people. I think that's terrific.
Absolutely. Any school that's doing that is great. Northwestern's always done that, but very unofficially, in that just alumni networks and friends who knew each other at school wound up being a great resource for me. But I know so many colleges are doing it more officially now. And let's be honest, it's a heck of a lot harder to get into college now than it was if we're talking 30 years ago. And even more so, it's a heck of a lot harder to get a job, to get a career. So everybody needs help. I got a lot. So I believe so much in starting.
You are a slam dunk. I mean, so listen to this voice. Look at that face.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's got talent. Look at those pecs. Look at those abs. And then.
You know, they still want me to do that.
Do you have a
good sign.
Yeah. Are you still asked to take off your shirt?
No complaint. I'm afraid one or two things I said sounded like I had a beef or something.
No.
I'm super. Super grateful.
Yeah.
And happy to do whatever's required. So I love what I do, and I'll do it until I'm flabby.
I just wanted to say you're in my favorite romantic comedy. My name's Violetta, by the way.
Which one, V?
The Wedding Date.
Oh, hey, Violetta, that's a great movie.
Isn't it? It's my favorite.
Yeah. People really love it. That remains as warmly popular as it was right away. But can I be honest? I thought that movie wasn't going to be any good. I don't know why.
How could it not be with I'd Miss You If We Never Even Met?
There's some great lines in there.
Dana
Fox wrote that.
Great
line. Really, really nicely written. So it lasts. Some of them are really good when they come out, but then they don't stay good. But Wedding Date really has as much as My Best Friend's Wedding did.
So you don't have a good gauge for how well a movie's going to do? You don't know when you're done or when you first see the script, oh, my God, this is huge. You don't have a sense of that?
Yeah. Sometimes it's obvious, but a lot of times I'm off the mark, and it really mattered more 10 years ago. I'd suggest that, how a movie does for an actor who does what I do, it doesn't matter as much as it used to. Reviews are kind of irrelevant, or at least they're swiped by, it used to be that newspaper coming out on Friday morning for the review of your movie used to change people's fate. That New York Times, that Variety art, review.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's like you can actually risk being in something bad and it won't ruin your career. So
why? Because it's just got a longer shelf life with the internet and Netflix and things like that.
Absolutely, different viewing patterns, different formats. People absorb things differently. Like a movie in a theater, we have actual movie stars right now that fans of theirs have never seen displayed in a movie theater. They've only seen them on a computer screen or a handset.
Don't you hate that as an actor? I mean,
no, I love all the kinds of work, and this has been a fascinating it's been a fascinating transition, and guys like me really had to stay light on our feet to get to absorb the shock of the recession that hit right when the technology was changing. So
I don't want to interrupt.
I'm not complaining, but there was a really interesting period there where the work slowed down and then work changed.
Go ahead, Steve Bertrand. What's up?
That addresses a question that I've wondered about. Since people now are not seeing films on the big screen, are you noticing that the stories are being written differently or directed differently now for smaller screens?
Maybe some of the camera technology too adds to that, in that the visual effects are so good that they play at any size. Maybe even 10 years ago they started framing closer on people's faces in the big movies.
Right.
So you could kind of see somebody watching it on a bus.
They're whispering in my ear. You've got to take a break. So let's Elif, let's close with the music that we said we would close with. Hit that. I presume you recognize this? Dermot, do you know what music I'm playing?
No, not yet. What is it?
It's from Rogue One. That's you on the cello.
Yeah, that's me on the cello. There it is. Wow. Thanks
I'm not
for
kidding.
Playing that, you guys.
He was playing the cello on the soundtrack to Rogue One. Because he obviously doesn't have enough skills or talents and needs to fall back on that if things don't work out for him.
I was Well, I was going to mention earlier, I also played in the symphony up here at Northwestern, too. So, yeah, I came in as a, you know, a top student cellist, but then returned to it as a recording with a scoring orchestra. Just yesterday, sorry, 2 days ago, I played the whole day in the orchestra scoring. Incredibles 2 is coming out, you guys, and it's awesome. Huge big band brass sound.
Wow. We're out of time, and you are too, but thank you so much for spending time with us, Dermot. Good luck tonight for the family reunion that they're having, a Starry Night variety show of performers hosted by Stephen Colbert up at Northwestern. Good luck to you guys.
Hey, thank you so much for the airtime today and for giving me a chance to say thanks to Chicago too, Evanston. I really appreciate it.
Lots to do on Fridays between 2:38 and 3 o'clock. Our fun things to do. We got recommendations for you this weekend and the bright side of life. Marcia Lyles from WGN Radio Sales is in our studio. Hi, Marcia. How are you?
Hi, John.
Marcia's going to read the text. We'll all talk about things to do and take your phone calls. Before we do any of that, though, Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini's on the line. Hey, Lou.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me follow your last guest. He was so nice.
Wasn't
it was just me doing the news, Lou.
No, it wasn't you.
He means
it was Dermot
Mulroney.
Oh my gosh, he was so, how about that?
What an appreciative fellow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ask me what my favorite line is. Ask me what my favorite line is that anyone ever said on the radio to me.
I was asking him what it was for him and his films. What's the best thing anybody ever said to you?
I swear to God, I had a Toto toilet that you could flush a 2x4 through.
Oh, you got to be Lou to appreciate that joke.
Gosh, I know
Lou,
you do. Right?
You are so lucky. I wonder if...
Do you play the cello as well?
Yeah, tell
me,
don't.
Tell me you got something else going for you.
Yeah,
actually,
Lou, right.
Lou is the Dilbert. Dilbert. I did it. It happened.
Yeah, thank God you didn't call him Dilbert.
They counseled my producer, Elif, off the air. They said, remember, it's Mulroney, not Mulroney or Rooney or Ronnie or any of those other things. And she didn't even have the heart to tell him, oh, his chances of getting out of Dilbert are slim.
Right.
Don't even hope for the last name to get right.
Right. Did anybody else hear Violetta literally melting in her chair while she was talking to him?
You're so dreamy.
It's my best movie ever.
Everything you do is just wonderful.
I'm glad that it actually came through because that's how I felt.
It was funny.
So what's going on, Mr. Fix-It? How's the candy jar going?
Well, thank you very much. We have 1 week left for our virtual candy jar that we're trying to raise money for Misericordia. Candy Days is next weekend, so a week from today. There's going to be volunteers throughout Chicagoland. If you go to WGNradio.com and you type in candy jar in the search box, you'll see a spot where people can make a donation, and we have our friends at Townstone Financial who are going to match up to $5,000. A huge thank you to all the people who have donated so far.
At the beginning of the week, you were at $2,200.
We're at about $3,000 right now.
Come on, donate right now.
And so my big thanks to Steve Bertrand Travel. If you're ever thinking about traveling, you go to stevebertrandtravel.com.
Did he make a donation?
And he did, and he gets a little plug. So, you know, if people make a donation, I will be a shameless plug and try not to violate any FCC rules.
Shout out to my wife, Brenda. Brenda, I don't know if we made the donation yet, so do it now.
Shout out to Brenda,
let's
who's
get
awesome.
Doubled by Townstone.
Yeah.
Doubled. That would be, in our case, a $10 donation. Then
right goes to 20. right. Just go to WGNradio.com. Misericordia is one of the finest institutions. Not even institution is the wrong thing. It's the finest facility and campus for people with developmental disabilities, both adult and children, and more importantly, they're taking care of the aging population. One of the biggest things with folks with disabilities is they're living longer.
Yeah.
And just like us, John, when we get older, we need more care. It's only amplified more, and it has been this flag, this banner that Misericordia has picked up and said, we have to take care of these people so their lives are fulfilled and rich for the rest of their lives. And so now, where, you know, the curve used to be 20 years ago, people were lucky to live into their 40s. They have residents that are approaching 70. And so the need continues, and any donation that anybody can make to Misericordia would be so, so welcome. Whether it's $2, $5, $10, you name it, we'll take it, and we'll get it matched by our friends at Townstone Financial.
Okay, so he's at about $3,000. It'll be doubled. Go to WGNradio.com, and then in the search bar, type in...
Candy jar.
candy jar, because candy days are coming up. Candy jar. Type in candy jar. In fact, Luke, call Elif back a little before 3 o'clock. Let's see if we can't move the needle right now, okay?
You got it. I will.
Make that donation. Thank you, Mr. Fixit.
That'll be my bright side.
That's our Lou Manfredini. The bright side's right around the corner. In fact, before we do that, we do this. I just want your kiss. This is our Fun Things to Do segment that we've cleverly called Fun Things to Do. It's sponsored by Private Vista. What are we listening to here, Ella?
This is Kate Nash. She'll be at Park West tonight. Doors at 7. Tickets are $25 at Ticketfly.com.
Give me something fun to do this weekend, Violetta Podramatic.
The boy band Bar Crawl in Wrigley. This sounds perfect. $20, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., so you might want to avoid that area after 6. But it's going to be a lot of fun. It includes a buffet breakfast, cheaper drinks, admission, and it's boy band music.
Joe Galwa, you may have seen him on Queer Eye for the, I keep saying Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, that's what it used to be called, now it's just called Queer Eye, on Netflix, is in town. We interviewed him a little while ago. He's doing his stand-up routine at Bourbon on Division tomorrow night at 8.
Camila Cabello is at the Riviera Sunday, 7:30, and tickets are at RivieraTheater.com.
Violetta, go.
The sun's finally out. The Food Truck Fest in Calumet City might be fun. It's free, but there are some VIP tickets still available if you're interested.
Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt are at the Old Town School of Folk Music. Megan Mullally is there tonight at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $30 to $35 at OldTownSchool.org. Elif.
Record Store Day is tomorrow, so visit your favorite record stores for special shows like Reckless Records and 606 Records.
How about you, V? Give me another one.
Jackson Park Earth Day event is going on 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's free, and you get to help clean up the golf course and the 57th Street Beach. You got to bring your own reusable bag, though.
Speaking of fun things to do outdoors, the Big Wiener Walk is going to be at the Montrose Point Bird Sanctuary. I'm so sorry I'm going to be out of town. It's Sunday at 10 a.m. Bring your wiener dog. I've got a wiener dog, and that's right near my house. And it's a lovely stroll over there. So all the little wiener dogs will be walking along the path there.
Will they be offering hot dogs?
Montrose Point. I'm not going to comment on that because that hurts their feelings. Sunday at 10. Give us one more.
The Chocolate Wine and Spirits Expo is tomorrow and Sunday starting at 11. Tickets are $20 to $25 at GourmetExpos.com.
Last one from you, Violetta Podramatic.
I don't know if you've been following the Wolves, but it's their playoff season at Allstate. It's going to be tomorrow, 7 p.m. $24 tickets are available still.
$245. Okay, call us right now. Here's the number, 312-981-7200. Here's our little song.
Some things in life are bad.
This is the bright side.
They can really make you mad. Other things just make
you swear. We do it on Fridays to kick off your weekend.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle.
Get ready to whistle.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
We start with Marcia Lyles. Marcia, what's your bright side?
You know, my bright side is I was able to give to someone in need. I purchased some pizzas, two pizzas, and I wasn't a very satisfied customer. I did not want to throw them out, so I found someone to give them to.
You handed it to somebody?
Yeah.
That made you feel good.
That makes me feel good.
That's a bright side. That's what we're doing. Hey, Violetta, what's making you smile?
So many things. I just can't think of one right now.
Wow. Okay. All right. Good one. Good. Okay, good.
Come back to me.
Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, so I was walking down the street, and this woman gave me two pieces of pizza.
Hey, Kevin's in Sportsland. What's making you smile, Kay?
I'll be spending most of the weekend at Sox Park watching Sox Astros, and wedged in between that, golf.
My bright side is Pete McMurray, the highly talented and way too attractive radio star, will be filling in for me somewhat next week. I'm going to be traveling with some WGN radio listeners, courtesy of Kelly Cruises. We're going to Europe!
Always look on the bright side.
And I'm going to miss my wiener dogs, but not that much. All right, let's pick up some phone lines. We start with Mike. Mike, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Mike?
I am smiling because Steve Bertrand said the Cubs are going on a road stand. I can't wait to see what they do on their home trip.
Okay, thank you for the call. He's happy. I'm not even sure what he was happy about.
Me and that guy are on the same level.
If it's making him smile, I'm happy for him. Hey, is this Shanna? You're on WGN.
It's the Thaw.
Wow, I love that name. What's your bright side?
My bright side is C's get degrees. I am one class away from finishing my nursing degree, and I finally passed my cardiac function exam. Woohoo!
For life is quite absurd.
Congrats! C's get degrees. Hey, Barb, this is John. Why are you smiling today? You're on the air.
My husband and I are going on the cruise with you.
Oh, my God. Barb, are you from Chicago?
Yes.
Are you all packed?
Sort of.
Have we met before?
No.
You sound like a lot of fun. Brenda and I are a lot of fun. I can't wait to meet you guys.
Oh, thank you. We'll see you then.
We'll see you soon.
Say hi to Steve.
On line four. Hey, Jerry. Jerry, why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because my girlfriend had a stroke about 6 weeks ago, and today you would really never know that she had the stroke at all.
Man, you guys are too young for that. It's going okay, huh?
It's going wonderfully.
Happy days, Jerry. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That's the bright side. The glass is half full, you see. All right, Marcia, what have we got on the bright side text line?
All right, from 773, I had a breast reduction surgery 6 weeks ago. From an H to a D. The best thing I could have ever done myself. Major bright side.
Her husband doesn't agree.
I've been doing the bright side for a while. That's the first time someone said that. What's another one?
Well, I think everyone can agree with this one, especially from 815 and 847. It's nice outside, and we can go outside without jackets now.
Enjoy it. It's your last chance.
Yeah, if you want to call in or text 312-981-7200 about the weather, you'll get an amen from us. How about, let's see here. We go from Jerry to on the phone lines. Matt, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Matt, you're on the air.
Hey, King Big Johnny. My bright side is that my second of two vacations this year is tomorrow, and I could not be happier.
Let's go from him to Julie. Hey, Julie, you're on the air. What's your bright side, Julie?
My five-year-old son, who's severely handicapped, is having a big birthday bash with 100 people, and it's nice weather.
You didn't want him indoors, did you?
Oh, no.
Hey, Mary, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Mary, Mary.
Oh, my bright side is that my daughter is going away for the weekend, so I get to watch my 2-year-old granddaughter, Lydia, all to my myself. You must always face
the curtain. That's a grandma. She's happy she's babysitting. Marcia, give me another bright side.
Okay, 630. I closed two big deals. I'm a recruiter, and I found my candidates their dream job. Happy to be a part of the employment process.
Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Bill?
John, I'm sitting outside with the sun on my face, feeling the warmth of the sun on my skin.
Always look on the light side of life.
I hope so. Hey, Phyllis, this is John. Why are you smiling?
My 25-year-old son had some minor surgery Wednesday, and two things. One, it's not cancer. And two, he was so funny coming out of anesthesia.
Boy, what a relief. And boy, people are funny when they do that. They say the damnedest things, don't they?
Oh, he was singing the Blues Brothers.
I'm so happy for you, Phyllis. Our best of the family. Always look on the bright. Back in the newsroom, Judy Pilak. You got a bright side for us, Judy?
I do. It's my son's birthday. Conlin, happy 24th.
Maybe time for one more here. How about Darren? You're on WGN. Darren, why are you smiling today?
I'm looking at a great fireball in the sky, and I don't mind one bit.
Yeah, he's looking at a fireball in the sky, and he doesn't mind. Read one more, Martian.
847. Well, this is Scott John, and my bright side is I work outside of Amazon, and I have to thank Tom Skilling for finally bringing the gorgeous weather.
Oh, by the way, Mary Jane's on line six. Hey, Mary Jane, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Mary Jane?
Hi, John. You bet. The Bears' schedule came out today, and their home games are all noon games except the opening game. I am so happy. I really don't care for the night games, but I'm looking forward to football already. I'm happy.
Isn't it nice that on January, February, March, April 20th, 420, somebody just called in named Mary Jane.
Always look on the bright side.
I just noticed that. Marsha, thank you for coming down and reading some of the text for us.
Not a problem.
We love Marsha Lyles from WGN Radio Sales, and we appreciate your calls, too. We'll do it again. I don't think we are going to do it next Friday. I'll be gone, but I'll be back the following Friday. Ro and Anna strolled into the studio in a minute.
I bet you were good at that.
What's the best part of your show coming up here today, kids?
Michael Steele. Oh, my God. First hour. Michael Steele and Mark McKinnon from the circus. I don't know if you started watching the circus on Showtime last week. It was the third season. They were on the campaign trail. Then they did the first year of Trump. And they just do it week by week. And it's so beautifully shot. They go out and they spread out their reporters and their producers to get you the story and get you the angles of the story that you've never seen. Coming up this week, they're actually in the limo with Michael Avenatti after he drops off Stormy Daniels. It's crazy.
I have not seen this show. I've heard your interview that you did last week about it. And friends of mine have watched, and they said it's the most amazing access at the most amazing time you'll ever have.
So last week, people should go see this. Last week, they go to Moscow.
Yeah.
And they talk to the director of RT, the Russian propaganda television network that Larry King works for. Hello.
State-owned media. Mm-hmm.
And the woman who's Putin's director of communications. And you cannot believe the day is night and night is day.
She felt programmed to me, just like a bot who was repeating Putin's lines and believing them or acting as if she did.
How crazy is it that we would go try to poison somebody in England? Who would do that?
Yeah, right.
We'd never do that.
It's clearly the British Secret Service.
We'd never interfere with your election.
Yeah. Why would we do that? Well, we have people that say that you did. They were just in St. Petersburg talking to one of their... This was chilling. They're in St. Petersburg talking to one of the women in the troll farm in St. Petersburg who was part of this whole thing.
Oh, really?
Thing.
Does that?
That did it in the 2016 election. And then when they bring it up to Putin's communications director, she goes, what's her name?
That was so threatening, wasn't it?
Oh, my God.
She said, first of all, they do not exist, these troll farms, but what's her name?
I jot note. I take note on name, yes?
Oh, God.
That's how it was.
Yeah, so we're not playing in short pants here. Anyway, it's the first hour, and Skilling will be here, too, and Richard Roper will be here, and the Carnarvon Wagon, and everything else like that. All right. Thank you, John.
Bye.
708. 888. 888-0000. I knew it.
Thank you.